Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 5 years ago this weekend, an ice storm devastated eastern South Dakota, and our next guest had qualified for the Boston Marathon. She left the ice-coated crippled trees looming over her house, and she headed east for a chance to stand at the starting line with elite runners from across the globe. It was April 15th, 2013. 18 minutes after receiving her medal, bombs exploded near the finish line. Jacqueline Palfy is with us now in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls for a look back. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I remember this day so clearly because I remember, did you do Facebook Live? I remember seeing the video and just, you know, my heart wanting to reach through and bring you home. But let's go back a little bit so people understand the marathon is Monday.
Yes.
And
it's Patriots Day. It's always on Patriots Day.
Always on Patriots Day. And how hard was it for you to get, you have to qualify for this. So how long of a journey is it just to get to the starting line?
Well, it probably depends on what kind of runner you are. For me, I'm a pretty average runner. You know, this was the best I was ever going to do. And some people qualify on their first race. Some people qualify so far under the standard that it's not even a challenge for them. But I'm sort of the everyman kind of runner. And I had worked for a few years and missed it. You qualify based on your gender and your age. Mm-hmm. So as you get older, you get a little more time, but you're older, so that doesn't really help you.
Right.
You know, like your body's catching up to you. It's right there with the clock. So I had qualified once, 9 months after my son was born. I qualified at the Fargo Marathon. And I like to say this because it's important for moms. I pumped in the car before I got to the starting line, you know, that's what I remember about that day.
Yeah.
And then I qualified. And then as I was training, I ran my little heart out and I cracked my pelvis. Mm. So that took me out for a long time and I had a lot of free time. So I ended up having another baby. And then, you know, they had tightened the qualifying standards and I tried to qualify in January of 2011, I think it was, or 2012 maybe. And I missed it by like 30 seconds in Phoenix. Mm. And then I came back and I ran it. I ran again in the Twin Cities in October of that year. And they call folks who just make it by a few seconds a squeaker.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a squeaker. I made it by like 13 seconds or something.
So that means you ran the Twin Cities Marathon in how
3:39,
3 hours, 39 minutes, or 37 minutes, which seems like a pretty big accomplishment to most people listening.
Yep. That's it's a big like an deal. 8:25 per mile pace, 8:23, okay. Something like that for 26.2 miles on a hilly course. And it was, it was very difficult. Toward the end, I ran with Owen Hotbett, who's a local longtime marathoner, amazing guy, and I credit him with getting me there. But toward the end, I couldn't even look at my watch because I was in so much pain that I thought if I looked down, I would trip. And I was like, just get there, sweetheart. And I got to the finish and I was like, holy cow, I did it.
So once you've qualified, now you got to get there. And that's not easy either because you have to get the time off work, the time to train, the money to get there. You've got two kids now.
So there's a ton of logistics and my cracked pelvis acted up again. So I missed a full month of training, the entire month of February before the April race. And they have a rolling registration because it fills up so fast. Mm-hmm. So the faster you are, the sooner you can register. So you're signing up like me, you're the squeaker and you're like, I have to beat the registration process.
Right.
You know, but I made it and we flew out in the ice storm. It was not, it was not good.
Right.
You know, the people I was with at the time were like, I don't think we should do this. Like our house is going to fall down. I was like, I cannot qualify again. I can build another house. Like I can't. Let's have some priorities here. You know, this is my last shot.
So you get there. Tell me what it's like to stand at the starting line.
Well, you have to get up at the crack of dawn and take a bus to Hopkinton. It starts in Hopkinton, and then it's a straight shot into Boston. It's a net downhill course, so you can't set a world record there. I wasn't going to anyway, but that's always good for people to know. And you know, you're it's all the athletes who are running and you're just in a field with a bunch of porta potties and everyone is saying you're there hours before you start. I mean, hours and hours. And everyone asks, where are you from? Where did you qualify? What was your time? How many times have you done this? And there's people just like you who are new. There are people who have been there and you all, it sounds so corny, I can hardly get it out, but you feel so special, you know? I was like, look how cool I am. And your number is based on your wave and your qualifying time. So the lower your number, the faster you are. So I'm not going to lie, you look at everybody and then you judge them right then and there, you know.
So your number is 17,040.
Yep, and then I finished 14,000.
Nice.
So I passed 3,000 people, which, unlike anything else, you know, I did not get passed by the entire field like most of my races.
But let's get to that finish line and your speed, because it's about, you finish, you have your moment.
Yeah.
About 18 minutes go by, and then what?
Come through the finish area, hug volunteer. There's a line of buses because there's thousands of runners, and all of your stuff is there. And, because you can't leave anything in Athletes Village, so it all goes on a bus. And so I'm standing in this line of buses, and the volunteers are leaning out the little school bus windows, you know, giving you your bag. And I hear something, and it's just sound. And I thought a train hit a building. That's what it was just like, what the heck was that? And I was actually texting Owen, and I said, what just happened? Yeah. Because I couldn't see anything. And Owen replied, well, I think when you look at your splits, you'll see, because, you know, I slowed down a little and I was like, no, I'm talking about something else, you know? And I'm like, thanks for the vote of confidence in my race, Owen, and I appreciate it. I feel like we have a national issue here.
Right.
But, and you just don't know what it is. And honestly, at first I was like, huh, that was kind of loud. And then you hear it again. And then it's like a weird slow motion where, I mean, in my head, I see a movie scene where people are turning and we're like, what's going on? And you can't really tell, you know, and then, you know, they said, get out of the square, everybody go. And then they said, stay where you are, get out of here. And my brother-in-law texted me or called, I can't remember, but said, I just saw a line of motorcycle cops go screaming by. They were at mile 23. And he was just like, stay where you are. Well, you can't stay where you are because you're in a swarm, you know? So there was this moment of, I don't know what to do. I don't know where I should be. Where's the safe place to be? Where am I going to meet my family? Where are they telling me to go? And then, you know, you're a journalist. I was a journalist. I'm still, you know, a writer, and you jump out of the frying pan into the fire every time. And you're like, I got to get back out there and see what I can see.
Right. At the time, you worked for the Argus Leader. And
yes.
You knew there were a lot of South Dakota runners who were there. And now the scramble is, you know, not only is your own family somewhere there on the race course, maybe at the finish line, you don't know, but there are other runners from the state. And now is the chance to try to figure out where they're at and who's okay. You turn on your phone and you start reporting.
Absolutely. And these are people I know and love. And I had written about the folks going to Boston every year because it's a passion of mine. And so I, you know, I legitimately worried about them. And I sent my contacts back to the Argus Leader at the time. I know that all the folks there were in a meeting. And the story I heard is that John Holt saw, former Argus Leader reporter, saw a news alert come up on his phone about the bombing, showed it to some other editors, and then boom, everybody clears the room and goes and tries to find where are our folks. And I sent the contact information back to them so they could do their own work. But yeah, I mean, you're worried about everyone and you're worried about yourself and you have no idea what's going on.
Right. You've written about this. You recently wrote a column that I saw on Facebook. You work for Sanford Health now, and there's a Sanford Health News website.
Correct.
And as I was reading this, it struck me that there is a before and an after that day.
Yes, it's two
with the conversations
days.
You have before and the conversations you have after. What we talked before a little bit, how fast are you? What's your time? Yeah. How did you qualify? How many times have you been here? What are the conversations after?
Where were you when the bombs went off? Did you finish the race? You know, and the feelings I have are probably so different from someone who got stopped at mile 22 or 24.
Right.
And think about them. They had worked too. And I am not trying to diminish the tragedy that happened at the finish line. And no runner out there would, but there would be a sense of loss of good grief, you know. What
it adds
what
to
now?
The entire story of the day if you were not allowed to finish.
Yes.
Even though you would feel, I survived.
Yes.
And this happened, but you would also feel the sadness for what happened in front of you and for the fact that this dream that you worked so hard slipped away on the same day.
Yes.
And now this greatest, you know, one of the great days of your life is always tied
And then you have to get over the guilt of having those feelings.
Right.
You know, and you talk to folks and they say, it's okay to feel both things. You know, you can feel happy about the day and sad about the day at the same time.
Right.
But yeah, the conversations were very different. And, you know, if I see people now and they have the royal blue and gold Boston stuff, that was the color that year. And you go up to them and say, where were you?
Right.
You know, and it's this immediate intimacy.
You were, the weather has changed your plans once again. You were going to run a race this weekend, 50
yes.
miles?
Yes, I was supposed to run a 50-mile race at midnight tonight in Minnesota, which, another ice storm. Thank you, South Dakota. I really appreciate that.
How have you changed as a runner before and after Boston 2013?
I don't want to run a huge, crowded race like that. You know, it was everything I wanted it to be. It really was. It was a beautiful day until it wasn't. And it was a beautiful course. And I got everything I needed out of that race. All the reasons I wanted to go, I got. But afterward, I felt very uncomfortable in big crowds. You know, I don't want to go to the fair. I don't want to go to the mall. You know, I don't want to go to your big old festival. I'm not going to go. Mm-hmm. And I... you know, part of it is just not wanting to be in that kind of a group. And part of it is I don't want to work that hard as a runner like I did to qualify. And So now I do a lot more trail running. It takes all the pressure off of the time and it's more solitary. And I don't know, it's different. I feel different about it. It's a different way to test yourself. But I don't want to go back. My sister said, I'll pay for you to go back so you have a different experience. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm okay.
Yeah.
With my experience.
You write about running also for 605 Running Company in downtown on their blog. You can follow that on Facebook. And for Sanford Health News, you can follow her writing. And you're running. Running is about more than running.
Always.
For you. And it's also about, you know, Shalane, everything. What is it not about?
Right? Well, Shalane Flanagan is running this year, right? She's a favorite. And she, her parents were runners, and she has described it in previous interviews over the years as she calls her sport, long-distance running, the church of the long run. And that is 100% what it is. It is a moving meditation for me. You know, this is my social hour. This is my alone time. This is my therapy. This is when I write. This is when I think. This is when I do everything, is mile after mile after mile.
What will you do on Monday? Now you'll be here in
I will wear
town.
A Boston Marathon shirt underneath my work clothes and only put my fancy dress shirt on when I have to go to something official. And then I already told folks that I'm not coming to their 10 o'clock meeting because I will be watching TV.
What are you looking for when you watch the race?
I just want to watch it. I love to see the best of the best trying to win, right? You know, and that's always exciting. But then I like to hear all the stories of the regular folks who are out there. You know, Boston, you have to qualify, but also you can be a charity runner. So they often have really wonderful stories about folks who are raising a ton of money for different causes and the reasons why. And I love that that's the other component of that race. Do well or do good and you're in.
Jacqueline Palfley will put some links up to some of your writing about the event as you remember it on our website, listen.sdpb.org. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.